Hello, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 7th of October, 2009, and I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. Welcome to another show. Tonight, we return to the subject of Chappelle Corby. On the eve of the fifth year since her incarceration, we will be interviewing her uncle, Sean Hatton, who talks to us from Darwin. And we will be covering some ground that we covered in the last interview with Roy Reeves, but we'll be going deeper into the question of media deception. And we're going to be focusing our spotlight on the ABC. The ABC has played its part in spreading rumour and gossip and possibly deliberate disinformation in regard to the Corby case. I've actually spent the last month or so going over all the information I could find. I've been reading web pages, I've been playing video, I've been watching late line pieces, A Current Affair, Today Tonight, 60 Minutes. I've read dozens of newspaper articles, and it's been quite a journey. And you know, through all of that exploration, one thing I've come to understand is that the average person's point of view about the guilt or innocence of Chappelle Corby has been, in virtually every case, and I've spoken to a lot of people randomly, their opinion has been influenced by something they read or saw on television. And all of these pieces that have run have included completely unsubstantiated gossip in many cases. In some cases, claims made by people who are mentally unstable or criminals, career criminals. And none of them seem to hold water. And this is becoming increasingly alarming because it gives us an example, and we can put this under the magnifying glass as an example of the media's ability to completely shape public opinion. And it is a really serious situation. And I think you really have to come to grips with the evidence, with the number of ridiculous claims that were made through channels that one tends to respect, like ABC television programs like Late Line and a 7:30 report, or you know, broadsheet newspapers like Sydney Morning Herald and The Australian, and you know, articles purportedly written from an investigative point of view and making claims that seem quite startling and appear to really incriminate members of the Corby family. And the average member of the public reading these pieces or watching these television pieces cannot help but be influenced by them. And I think a lot of people are not even aware of the fact that their opinion has been molded. It's been happening. It happened over a period of several years, and there were so many different versions of the propaganda against Chappelle Corby that most people aren't aware exactly where it came from. In fact, a lot of people tell me that, you know, something like, I heard this, or, you know, a friend of mine said something, and that friend maybe said that they heard it from someone else. If you follow back the chain, you'll find that the original story came from a journalist's pen, and people repeat stories, and then it ends up coming to you like, oh, my friend said he knows someone. Don't think so. None of these claims, like people have said, oh, my friend said he knows that people smuggle dope to Bali and sell it. This particular claim can be traced back to an article that was published in a major Australian newspaper. And we'll be covering that later in the show. And there is not one single shred of evidence behind it. There is no factual basis for the claim. And the police have denied knowing any drug connection between, exporting drugs from Australia to Indonesia. And there was never any police investigation after Schapelle Corby's arrest of any network. So it was never explained how 4.2 kilograms of marijuana was able to be sold, how it was to be distributed, and where it came from. So look, we'll be getting into all of that in about another 15 minutes. At this point, I'd just like to welcome back to the show Josh Jackson. He'll be coming on in about 10 seconds. There's some rousing applause to welcome back Josh to the show. Josh, are you there?
Ah, it feels fantastic to be back, Harrowood.
Fantastic to have you.
Yeah, and I've loved the shows. I've been listening from my trip around the world to the shows, and it's just it's fantastic. And people are very very happy to hear when I introduce them in Germany and stuff like that to the Truth News of Australia.
Excellent, excellent. And I hear you heard me on the radio this morning.
Oh, mate, it was spun out. I set the alarm because I thought, I'm sick of waking up to my mobile. I'll set the radio, the clock radio, and I set it, and I accidentally had it on some weird station, I forgot to set the frequency. Anyway, the alarm goes off this morning with this snow, this, and I heard your voice. I thought, what? I swear I can hear Harrowood within all that snow.
Isn't that amazing?
Nah, that's weird. And I thought, hey, Emily, can you hear that? And she goes, oh, go back to sleep. You're dreaming. I thought, no, this is Harrowood. And I was moving the radio to try and, get the better antenna like the old rabbit
as you
ears.
Do. Yeah.
And then I heard, that big monologue of, I'm mad and I'm not going to take it anymore. I thought, what?
This cannot be a coincidence.
This cannot be a coincidence. So I waited and, hey, presto, there was Crispy Tea, and I'd accidentally found the radio station of Crispy Tea's.
Yes, I was on the airwaves. I was on the real airwaves this morning on Radio Skid Row.
Radio Skid Row, that's the one. Fantastic.
Yeah, with Chris and Jack and Wendy. Yeah, it's an excellent show, actually. Anyone listening?
It's a very good show.
I recommend it to you. I don't know what number it is on the dial, otherwise I'd
88.9.
There you go, 88.9. Check it out. They explore really important issues.
Is in Sydney, folks.
Absolutely. If you're in Sydney, I think it gets right across Sydney, although over you're in Five Dock, aren't you? Maybe it doesn't quite reach there. Although it's based in Marrickville. Kind of, it should get there.
It's very sort of, it's kind of strange. But I got into the car and I hit the radio and it was fine until Excellent. Lane Cove, and then it started wigging out again. So
yeah, well, those guys do a great job of questioning everything: the New World Order, global warming, war, famine, plague, you name it, they get there. Now look, we've only got a few minutes before our guest comes on.
Yeah.
Josh, can you give like a lightning roundup, a 5-minute roundup of what you've been up to for the last month? I mean, not on a personal level, of course, just where you've been and what you've seen.
I had to go over to Berlin for family reasons, and I was lucky enough to be there during the massive elections. And one thing I noticed was the Piratenpartei, which is the pirate party of Germany. Is absolutely, its posters were everywhere. Angela Merkel and all those posters
that
were everywhere too.
That is a really important sign of the times, folks. The Pirate Party, of course, is allied with the Pirate Bay, or they're certainly on the same wavelength in terms of they support free exchange of information, free downloading of free things that people share with each other, correct?
It is correct. And I mean, I'm not sure how close, I don't know if they're affiliated with Pirate Bay. I think they might be, but they're definitely from that philosophy. But their main issue is definitely stopping governments from censoring the internet. So that's a big one. Also to stop the content industry from using things like excuses like pedophilia and all this disgusting stuff and using that sort of stuff to censor the internet more and make it more policeable. Now, the whole reason we've, as you all know, folks, the whole reason the internet is so fantastic is because of its anarchic nature. And this is what really, it's such an amazing construct that's just appeared out of nowhere and over the last 15 years that it really is a prey that cannot be reined on by these disgusting corporations and governments. So the Pirate Party, the problem is everyone perceives them as a one issue party, but they've also got other issues like no patenting of genetics, especially animal genetics. So that's what they run on. But they picked up 2% of the vote in Germany, and that's quite a significant piece for a perceived one issue party or a minor party. And that's really fantastic. And I urge everyone to check out the Pirate Party, because someone needs to jump on it here in Australia and start it over here, because they're waiting for it. The whole it's it can definitely be franchised, and if I may put it that way.
Excellent. Well, that's a really interesting bit of news there from Europe. I mean, we don't get much info from the grassroots of what's happening in Europe. We really only get tidbits, and we get the superficial level.
Yeah, well, the 9/11 truth movement was quite alive there too. I did see a lot of chalking, meaning people using chalk on the streets to show websites, truth activist websites, just to truth slogans. It was really quite inspirational, and because chalk, it just wipes away in the rain, so you can't be pulled up for graffitiing. It's a semi-permanent fixture, especially if you can do it where rain doesn't get to it. I'm pretty sure I'm not sure if it's legal, but it's better than spray paint.
Absolutely.
Because it's semi-permanent, and I think it really opens people's eyes when they see these messages sort of everywhere. They think, wow, the psych, it delivers a zeitgeist of information where people start thinking, wow, I've seen this a bit too many times. It must be, there must be some validity to it. The other thing, I popped over to Spain, because of course when you're in Europe, when you're in Germany, you're in Europe, and everything's just $50 away on a flight. So I had to see my brother over in Spain. Now, I really saw the economic crisis hit there, folks. People think, Australia, what's this economic crisis? We don't really see it, blah, blah, blah. Now, there are pockets of these buildings around the place in, these maybe 200 villas just pocketed in these certain situations. You'd be driving along the road, along the mountain. All of a sudden, there'll be this sort of mini town, which is no shops or anything, just houses. And all empty, all ghost towns, and it wasn't siesta. It was maybe there was a couple of people sleeping, but literally ghost towns, because England, a lot of English people invested their money into holiday houses in Spain, and they've all gone bust. A lot of these developers have gone bust. There's literally ghost towns everywhere. Some of them even half built with rusting cranes just sitting there. So you really, this was down the bottom of Spain, La Linea and Gibraltar and stuff. You really saw this economic crisis, because the English people have really been, the credit has been pulled. And so you see it. And now with gold, did you see today, Harold? Gold has hit right now I'm looking at the gold, $1,048. It's jumped another $15 today. Last night it jumped $35.
Yeah, that is really, really interesting. Hey, look, we're going to have to end it there. We're going to have Sean coming on in a minute. So I'm just going to pause you right there.
No worries, mate.
We will move on with the next segment. So just stand by. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, well, we are into the main part of tonight's show, and we are back with the Chappelle Corby case, having done a first attempt to grapple with the information about 3 weeks ago. I went away and I did a whole lot of study. I've read dozens and dozens of articles. I've watched dozens of mainstream media, television interviews, investigative pieces. I've basically just squeezed the internet dry trying to understand this case. And there is quite a lot of information out there, but as with many issues that we've explored on Truth News, information and disinformation and misinformation can be all mixed together, and the sheer quantity of it can make it hard to know what is going on. You know, you read one thing and you think one thing, you read something else and then you think something else, and you just, in the end, get so confused that you don't know what to think.
Well, that's right. And the mainstream population generally just watches one show on Channel 7 and the mind's made up.
They do. Thank you very much for that, Josh. You're absolutely right. And I'd just now like to offer a very warm welcome to our guest, Sean Hatton, who's talking to us from Darwin. Sean is Chappelle Corby's uncle, and he has been doing all he can to, firstly, clear Chappelle's name and get her out, because that's the key thing here. I mean, this is a person suffering a horrendous situation, and Sean has certainly convinced me on a gut level of his sincerity, as did Roy, that we have a miscarriage of justice here. And Sean, I'd just like this point to say, you know, thanks so much for coming on the show. Are you there?
Yes, thank you very much, Heywood.
Terrific. Look, as I was saying, you've really put so much work into trying to address this problem with logic, with facts, and you've helped me to understand a lot of things. You've steered me in the right direction, but we have, at the moment, a major problem. Okay, we've got a major problem in Australia. And this is something that we cover on this show, and we're familiar with it, but your case is one of the most shocking examples of mass media control of public opinion that I think I've ever seen. And if you'd like to pick that up and run with it, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, what you're saying is exactly right, but to tell people that it's happening and people just don't believe it, they just sort of think that it's just not possible that anyone would want to do this, but
absolutely,
you know, to keep Australian interests with Indonesia, certainly trumps Chappelle's human rights. So
indeed. Now, look, I'd just like to, before we get into some of the subjects today, which are going to be a bit complicated, I want to just summarise where we're at from the last show I did, and some points that we can be absolutely clear on. Because it's very important to be clear about what we can be clear on, is that from the point of view of legal principles and the legal principles on which this country runs, there is so much reasonable doubt in regard to the guilt of Chappelle Corby that there is no way she would have been convicted, and if she was convicted, it would have been overturned on appeal, because there were so many failures of due diligence and due process in terms of the way the prosecution handled the case. And, you know, we'll just summarise those very quickly. No forensic evidence, no fingerprinting evidence, no investigation of any drug connections on either side, or at least no produced results from an investigation that could show that there was any connection sending marijuana from Australia to Bali. And no arrests, not even any suspects in terms of that alleged drug connection, simply, and no investigation even of the travelling companions that Chappelle was with, as if they didn't even matter. No fingerprinting of her travelling companions, no investigation even of what might have been in the other suitcases she was carrying. So many different things that are normally done in any proper investigation were not done. The only piece of evidence, the single piece of evidence that the prosecution relied on was the fact that when she opened her boogie board bag, the marijuana was there in a transparent plastic bag in full view. Like, all you had to do was open the zipper and there it was. And that was it. That was the prima facie case. And they themselves refused to fingerprint the bag. They handled the bag before they should have, so that would have contaminated fingerprints. And they refused requests from Chappelle Corby's defense team to have the marijuana analyzed and to have DNA samples analyzed from the marijuana in the bag.
And of course, that's all their evidence. That's the prosecution evidence.
Yeah. This is a massive amount of potentially incriminating evidence that when a person says, I'm not guilty, the onus then is on the prosecution to prove by all these other measures that the person is guilty. Normally, when a person is caught carrying a whole lot of drugs into a country, they confess because they know they're guilty, right? And if they are guilty, there is going to be all other ways that can be proven, right? So when someone says, I'm not guilty, the prosecution then has to say, well, you are, and we've proven it in all these ways. Well, they didn't. All they said was, there's the bag, it was in your bag, you're guilty. That was it.
That's their total case, except for a couple of lying court officials, at a lot, you know, the customs officials and Bali police.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Sean, I've got lined up here the interview that Liz Hayes did with Chappelle in 2004, and a lot of people may not have listened to that, so I'd like to actually just play that, because I certainly had not heard it, and it's very important, I think, to hear a person in their own words, because, well, you know, in a court case, that's very important for a jury. It's always very important in any kind of to form a judgment is to hear what the person themselves said. And, you know, this whole thing with Chappelle has been a trial by media. We know that. I know that's wrong. But we now have to continue that. We can't just turn our back on that, because public opinion has been so influenced by everything that they've seen. So I want to go back now. Let's wind the clock back to December 2004 when this interview was conducted. And here you're going to listen to Chappelle speaking directly, you know, just answering questions very directly about what happened. Here we go.
I shouldn't be here.
Can you believe it?
No. No, I can't. All I can do is try to adapt as best I can.
Chappelle, the death penalty is a reality. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I know that. But hopefully it won't get to there. The prosecutors are actually at the point now to decide whether it's 20 years or life.
20 years of life?
Which to me, it's like, what's the use of me trying to survive these days anyway?
It's been reported in the Australian press that the customs officer who challenged you about the drugs said that you, in his opinion, behaved very nervously.
He barely looked at me. I opened them myself.
He said that you were reluctant.
To open it?
Mm.
He didn't even ask me to open it. He said to my brother, is that your bag? Is that your boogie board? I'm going, ah, yay, I'm so happy. No, it's mine. Hey, here you go. Whee. Yep, that's mine.
He felt that you were acting almost suspiciously.
No. And then I wasn't sure if he'd seen it, but I knew I was going to be in trouble anyhow, whether he's seen it or whether it's been planted there and someone's waiting for me to go outside, then they're going to get me outside. So I was going to be in trouble either way.
You didn't try and conceal?
No.
What was in your biggie book?
Well, I didn't know if he saw it. I opened it and then I closed it.
So you unzip it?
I unzip it. He didn't even ask me to. I did it myself, and I opened it and I've gone. And I saw it and I was like, oh my God, I'm in trouble. And then they did a little test and it came in purple. And then they came to me and it says marijuana. And I'm like, well, yeah, I can smell it's marijuana, but it's not mine. This is my bag and this is this and this is not mine. But they were getting my brother to touch it and do all things. And I'm like, it didn't hit me. What's happening?
I'll just pause there. Look, it's heartbreaking to watch that. I don't know what you think, Josh. Have you had a chance to see any of these interviews, Josh?
Yeah, that's really.
Look, I've played that particular one over and over again, trying to watching her face, looking at her eyes. It's a very emotional experience to watch that. My gut feeling is she's innocent. Of course, my gut feeling is irrelevant, and I don't really want to, you know, bring that into it. But what I see there is someone not prevaricating, not doing some shifty thing. I just see someone, and she's been this way all the way through, very consistently. Her position has been absolutely consistent, and it doesn't. That is in itself not consistent with someone who's guilty. I mean, but by the time she was convicted, if she'd been guilty, I think she would have done a deal. I think she would have confessed and she probably would have got off, you know, like she would have got probably 5 years tops, you know what I mean? Like there was no benefit to her from insisting on her innocence. So that, you know, that's just my total gut feeling. I'll hand it back over to you, Sean.
Yeah, where does that naive? We're like any family. We just believe that in the end, justice will prevail. You know, like there's enough evidence there to prove that she's innocent, and you know, this can't happen. So we just kept on. But well, the footage from Australia will come through. That'll prove it. For Chappelle to ask for the footage from any Australian airport, like she went through Brisbane Airport, Sydney Domestic, and then Sydney International. If one frame of that footage showed that Chappelle had a pregnant boogie board, or she would have had a change of plea. And
Absolutely. There's
no way in the world she could control or know what footage was taken, and yet she's the one asking for this. There are approximately 40 cameras in Brisbane Airport, from when you get out of your car, you're under surveillance, down through in through the check-in, and then down through to the oversized baggage. And for her to think that every camera is turned off is just, you know, crazy. And how the hell could she ever control that? She's, you know, works in a fish and chip shop. So we really believed it was going to be all over. We thought, well, we'll just be able to get that footage. That'll prove that the marijuana wasn't in there when she checked it in. And that's the end of it. All of a sudden, the bag footage disappeared. There is no footage from Brisbane, Sydney, or Sydney International.
Yes, I forgot to mention that when I was summarising the lack of proper investigation and forensic evidence, that the footage, the lack of the prosecution being able to provide any camera footage, is another glaring failure of the prosecution to prove its case. And that includes footage from Indonesia or from Australia. But please continue.
The footage from Indonesia would have proved who was telling the truth right there and then. When Winata sat in the court and said that that Chappelle said the marijuana was hers and that she didn't want to open the bag and so forth, she called him a liar in court. Right then and there, the defence asked for the footage, and the judge said, "Oh, if we need to." Now that would have proved it, you know, one way or the other, who was telling the truth. And if you've only got to look at if it happened in Australia, if someone attacked someone and said, "Oh, well, there's footage," and one person's saying one thing, the other person's saying the other, well, if they won't show the footage, well, who do you think's the guilty party? You know, like
indeed.
If they had the ability to bring that footage forward.
But the failure of the Australian authorities, and I'm talking about Qantas, I'm talking about the airports, I'm talking about everyone, and they bounced the ball. Like the airport said it was Qantas, the Qantas said it was the airport. They were all pointing the finger at each other to avoid doing the right thing, which was to just supply the tapes. That's all they had to do. And
well, Qantas had a vested interest. They really don't want to have an innocent tourist leave Australia and become a drug smuggler at the other end. So They really didn't want to be too helpful because they wouldn't have wanted that footage to come out, because then it'd be proof positive that their security system doesn't work.
Absolutely. Now, look, I'd just like to summarise here what I think are two really, really important issues in this whole saga, okay? One is we have a miscarriage of justice and a person suffering in prison, which is appalling, okay? And my heart goes out to you and your family and to Chappelle, and it is one of the many injustices that are occurring in this world at this time, and it's important. But there is another issue here, and it's part of something bigger, right? And this is that what we see is that in the case of Chappelle, it was decided early on by our government that in order not to offend Indonesia, in order to appease Indonesia, that they were willing to sacrifice an Australian citizen for the sake of political expediency. But it gets worse. It gets worse. And this is where we're all affected. This is where we're all victims, okay? It's not just Chappelle. Once they'd made that decision, the government and the corporate media cartels together conspired to a campaign of criminal, fraudulent news reporting to change public opinion, because public opinion was 90% believing that she was innocent and demanding a response from the government.
Oh, look, they're extremely clever in the way they do it. Like, they every time there's a news story about Chappelle, they'll always say convicted. They'll preface it by saying convicted drug smuggler Chappelle Corby, and this reinforces in our minds that she's a convicted drug smuggler.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I've got a headline here from the Herald Sun from about a year ago. It says, Chappelle Corby's defence, a pack of lies. That's the headline, right?
Yeah.
But the body of the article is about that scumbag lawyer who was later, you know, disbarred anyway, who basically said a lot of nonsense. And basically, his name was Robin Tampo, for our listeners. He was actually disbarred for what he said in the end. But he made all these outrageous claims that have there is no follow-up, no substantiation to what he said. But
What Robin Tampo said was that he made that defence. Well, in a sense, he followed on from... On Triple J, there was a show called Hack. And just after it happened, there was quite a few... people ringing in, and they were saying, well, I was a couple of baggage handlers rang in, and they said it's a well-known fact that marijuana can be, you know, thrown into a bag at one end, and they'll ring up the guy at St. Brisbane Airport and so forth. So there was a little bit of, that's where the original story come from. After all Chappelle's other avenues of defence, when she asked for DNA, she's asked for fingerprinting, she's asked for all these other things, for the bags to be weighed, for... everything that she, the footage from Australia, every turn she would come to a dead end, there was nothing left for a defence. So the only defence they had was to use that defence, and which was to put an element of doubt that possibly it was baggage handlers. Chappelle didn't know where the marijuana come from, but that was all she was left with. So that's the defence they used, because it was feasible.
Absolutely. And look, these...
Let me just say this, but it wasn't baggage handlers in Australia. We're quite sure of that, because of what the Bali police, the way they acted, there could only be one reason for their actions. And, you know, like within the first 2 hours, there was footage of... The Bali police, one thing, were the ones that called all the media, because there was a lot of media there to cover the second anniversary of the Bali bombing.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of media already in Bali. So at that stage... at one stage, the footage has. I'm not sure what channel it was on, but I've been told it was on in Seven in Perth, where a policeman's holding the bag above his head, marijuana bag above his head, walking through the throng of reporters, and one of the reporters asked him, "What are they going to weigh the bags?" And right there and then, he says, "No, it's not necessary."
Well, that's fascinating, isn't it?
That defies human nature. You know, at that stage. how could they possibly know what the prosecutor would want, what defence strategy we were going to use or she was going to use? They would need every piece of, they would be preserving every piece of evidence, and yet they were doing quite the opposite. They were destroying evidence even then. Well, they were trying to get Chappelle to touch the bag, which at that stage, if they really thought that they'd caught a drug smuggler, they would have kept that bag as far away from her as possible, because they would have been able to say, your fingerprints are on there and you didn't touch it at the airport, so you're absolutely guilty beyond any doubt. But they were doing the opposite. They were trying to get her to touch it.
I'm curious to know,
and then, of course, all the other things that they denied.
I'm curious to know why the Indonesian media was there at the airport.
It was international media were there at the airport straight away.
Straight away?
Yeah, well, within 15 minutes, there was...
That's extraordinary in itself.
Well, because they wanted a big drug bust, and to get, possibly to get... This is only conjecture, that they wanted to get funding for war on drugs. It could have been for a lot of reasons. To Pastrika, to try and get... climb the ladder again. He wasn't very popular. Bali was starving at the time because of... the Bali bombings. There was a myriad of reasons why it could have happened, why they did it.
Oh, look, I can tell you right now. Let's make it very clear. The Indonesians were very angry with Australia over many things, and I'll just tell you two things in particular. East Timor made every Indonesian hate Australia because of the way the Australians intervened over East Timor. But that was just the beginning. The Bali bombing was a total slap in the face to the Indonesians, because the Australian Federal Police just rocked in and they just took over the crime scene, and they drove the show. They decided who was going to be prosecuted, and the Indonesians basically just had to come along for the ride. And by the time Chappelle was arrested, they were pushing for Abu Bakar Bashir to basically get the death penalty. This is what Australia was doing to Indonesia, and this was all part of the war on terror, part of the war in Iraq, and all following from September 11. This is all interconnected.
That also comes down to what Sean was saying with funding, this whole sort of terror funding from multinational, from other countries, to sort of showcase the police work on how good they are and how good they are anti-terror and all this stuff, and that they need more funding and look at the war on drugs here as well. I mean, they're really, I mean, it is conjecture, but it is always important to look at reasons why and what could be, reasons for these sort of actions.
Well, I see the situation as potentially that Chappelle is like a hostage. Chappelle is a hostage to the Indonesians. I mean, Australia has put variety of pressure on Indonesia against what they wanted, and I tend to see it, if it was done at that end, if the drugs were planted in her bag at that end, what I see going on is that the Indonesians basically wanted to reset the balance, you know, to basically reassert their control and their power, and we had to go along with it. See, our government had to go along with it because we were already pretty up to our arms in lies and corruption. That the whole situation between Australia and Indonesia has a lot of problems with it. A lot of deception. A lot of corruption has, you know, gone down the tubes. So, for them to hang on to her, I think from a face saving point of view, I can understand it almost as like a colossal mistake, but not really a mistake. But I also see the Bali Nine, who were arrested only shortly after Chappelle, as being somehow pawns in this game too. And I did get the impression that when the Bali Nine were originally captured, and great efforts were made to make sure they were captured in Indonesia rather than letting them return to Australia, it looked as if a trade-off was going to happen, and the Indonesians were going to say, well, you can have Chappelle back, we'll keep the Bali Nine. I thought that's what was going to happen. I thought, yeah, they've worked a trade-off, right? It's a face-saving solution, you know, because the Bali Nine were guilty. They've admitted it, okay? So,
well, they're strapped to their bodies. It's a bit hard not to.
Yeah, so they're not protesting their innocence. So, you know, potentially that was organised by the AFP. I'm just purely hypothetical here, but, you know, possibly the AFP were going to say, well, you can have the Bali Nine, well, give us Chappelle back. I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't agree. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true, but the only thing is that this is conjecture. Well, the other stuff is real, like it's true.
Indeed.
You can, the things that have been done, well, like we're surmising some of this, but when you look at the facts of what's happened, like the Australian government were well aware, they had to have been well aware. Now, if the Australian government really believed for one moment that marijuana was being sent from Australia to Indonesia, they would have had to have gone to Chappelle's home and searched it, and searched a car, at least to sort of to show the Indonesians that we're not taking it lightly, that we don't allow our citizens to take drugs to your country.
Indeed.
And they didn't do any of that. And when even McKelty, when he was asked why there was no investigation in Australia, and even after Chappelle's pleading for the investigation, he stated that we are not in the business of clearing people. Meaning, if you turn that around and you say, well, if you're not in the business of clearing people, then you're saying that if you do an investigation, you will clear her. You know, it's as simple as that. But Howard was a lawyer, like John Howard's lawyer. He knew what was going on, and yet time and time again they kept on saying that they had no influence with the Indonesian courts. And yet there was a policy which was signed in 1987, which is a treaty between Australia and New Zealand, exactly allowing them for that they must get a sample of evidence if they ask in murder or drug cases, that they if they apply for it, then it must be given. And the Australian government kept on telling the Australian people that they couldn't interfere. Well, they weren't interfering. They had every right to. The AFP could have asked for a sample, and they had every right to ask for that sample of marijuana. And then the big media circus began. You know, Australia were in, as everyone knows, there was 90% belief in Chappelle at that stage.
There was. Television and polls were giving 90%. Absolutely.
I think, actually, even some of those polls that were coming out late were double negatives, I think, to even try and get those poll numbers down, because they were asking, you had to answer no to a positive question. Like, they were asking, I forget the exact question, you believe that Chappelle is guilty? And you have to say no. But if you would have said, do you believe that Chappelle is innocent, people would say yes more readily. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because you've got to give a negative answer to that. If you give a positive answer to a positive question, you'll get more of a positive response.
Now, this all started to change, didn't it, around about at the point when she was convicted or just before?
Oh, just before. Well,
right.
They started to go in damage control. Matthew Moore wrote the piece, just the pack of lies in the paper, in the Sydney Morning Herald, about how Indonesians, how Western Australians were taking marijuana to Indonesia.
Indonesia. I've got that article up here on my screen. The title is...
And calling it Aussie Gold. It had a name of Aussie Gold. Well, it's so... And he writes in this, which is laughable, but it's dangerous to buy marijuana in Indonesia. So, you know, Australians don't do it. So then he goes on to say that they're selling marijuana over there to Australians. Well, wouldn't it be more dangerous to sell marijuana than to buy marijuana? You know, the death penalty for selling it, for buying it, you're just going to get, you know, you slap on the wrist or whatever, you know, sort of thing. But it's not going to be anywhere near as bad as trying to sell the product.
Look, there are a huge number of problems with that story, and I encourage our listeners to check it out, and also check out the rebuttal article that was written. The article was called Why Australian Marijuana is a Big Hit in Bali, and it makes statements like this. While drugs might seem freely available on the streets, the foreigners who live in Bali, including those serving time in Korobokan jail, say that buying them is a risky business because you never know if the seller is an undercover police officer or a police informer. For that reason, Westerners in Bali are prepared to pay premium prices for marijuana if they can get it from other Westerners. Okay, now that's a good story. It sounds clever, and a lot of people will buy that, but it's completely ridiculous. It's a completely absurd statement. Yeah. If it had some facts behind it, I might be inclined to believe it, but it's purely speculative. I mean, there's no...
I mean, this guy just comes out and says this without any sort of reference.
He says here, a European man now serving a jail term for possessing hashish says he knows of several Australians who have been bringing strong hydroponic marijuana into Bali. Now, wouldn't you think a statement like that would draw some interest from the Australian Federal Police? I mean,
or at least the Australian media, that they would have investigated this story?
Something. I mean, these statements come straight out of nowhere. They hit the media, and in any normal context, that would lead to something, an investigation. It would be followed up. But no, these just go straight into the public domain, and people then repeat them as gossip. And it's like, oh, yeah, my friend knows someone who does something. And it's always like, yeah, a friend of mine told me they know someone. But no, they don't. They don't know anyone. Someone read this article and then told it to a friend. And then that person told it to one of their friends. And then it gets back to you as, a friend of mine knows someone. Nobody knows anyone, okay? It all starts from these things that are seeded in the mainstream news. And this is what makes me so angry, Sean. This is why I'm doing Truth News. This is why Josh and I are absolutely committed to following this case all the way through and to basically bringing our media back into some form of semblance of sanity and honesty and basic values. Because at the moment, they're just betraying our whole civilization. They're selling us down the toilet with what they're doing. And we need to stop it.
There's some amazing journalists. I mean, I talk with amazing journalists all the time, you know, and they just don't do their job anymore. I just don't know why. I don't understand why. Because their journalists go to journalism school to because they've got a passion for stories, for you know, they all want to be the next Seymour Hersh, and they just for some reason. They just don't get through the nets anymore. Maybe it's funding or what. I don't get it, because this story is so full of holes.
And also, this story is a fantastic opportunity for a proper investigative journalist to break an amazing story. And you know, it's up to us to do it, because we don't.
There hasn't been one ounce of marijuana found from Australia and Indonesia. You know, there hasn't been one drug bust since or before. So it's never happened. And yet, you know, this fantastic reporter, Matthew Moore, was able to find all these people that had smoked it. You know, and it just so happens just that it comes out the day before Chappelle's conviction.
Absolutely. Look at.
I mean, what an absolute. You know, it's that to me is someone that has no heart, no compassion for liberty, for truth and justice, for someone to write such an article and know that there's someone, a human being on the line and you know, someone that needs all the help they can, to write such filth, such conjecture and propaganda. It's
outright lies, yeah.
Yeah. It really is so sad.
But,
it,
you know, it's just been ongoing. And it just becomes truth after a while. People, for instance, you know, the current affair story about Chappelle and Mercedes having dinner, people believe that Chappelle goes out when she feels like it. Well, do you think they really would go out to dinner? And if that woman, Elizabeth Short, really thought that it was Mercedes and Chappelle, wouldn't she have waited for them to stand up so she could get a proper photo of them?
Let me just elaborate on that story for our listeners, because I've done some investigation into that. Now, A Current Affair ran this lurid story, yeah, the top headline story of the evening, saying that Chappelle and Mercedes had been caught having a dinner in a restaurant, and they had photographs, and they had a tourist who'd basically supposedly just come across Chappelle and recognized her, even though she's wearing dark glasses, in some, you know, dark place, right? And you see these photographs, and you see someone sitting there with dark glasses on, who side on, only a profile view, right? And you can't tell anything from looking at it. It's on television. There's absolutely no way that the viewer can make any decision about it. The extraordinary thing behind the story, because I've spoken to Roy, who was in the room when the interview was done, because the Current Affair apparently approached Ros Lee saying that Channel 7, basically painting Channel 7 as the evil ones, and that they were saying, look, Channel 7's going to do this terrible story about Chappelle and Mercedes, but we're going to do a counter story, and we just want to ask you a few questions. Now, that was all a complete lie. Channel 7 wasn't doing a counter story. Channel 7 wasn't doing a story. It wasn't a counter story. Channel 9 was the one who was doing the hit piece story, and
the
they basically ambushed them.
The reporter told us that she knew that it wasn't Mercedes and Chappelle in the story.
Yes, I heard that from Roy, that he said that they said they knew the photos were faked. They knew the photos were not real, or they weren't of Chappelle. But then they filmed it with a camera crew in there, and now look at these photos. And I think what they're getting a benefit from there, from their purpose, from their objective, is that Rosalie has that, you know, sort of working class, you know, accent and everything. And I think, you know, when she reacted and said, oh, that's not, you know, and she got angry.
Well, I think they wanted to capture that.
Rosalie,
I've been with Rosalie on quite a few occasions when there's been interviews.
Yeah.
And she will be polite,
yeah,
and, you know, for 99% of the interview.
Okay.
But just don't ask her, you know, like, say, for instance, at the end of the interview, after everything's happened, and then they'll go, so, is it really Mercedes and Chappelle? And then she'll just go, what? What are you talking about? You know?
Okay.
Just for the last half an hour, talked about how it isn't and how stupid it is, and they ask this question, of course it fires her up, you know? Like, and
that's
then,
amazing.
That's the piece they use.
That is such an old trick. You know, you spend an hour interviewing someone and you wait for that one point where they look uncomfortable and you basically provoke them a little bit, and then you just discard the rest of it. You discard everything except that, like, 30-second segment.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a trick that they used on Hidden Truth when they were interviewing James and interviewing Katrina and so forth, because what they do is they ask them a question, and then they answer the question, and then they hold the camera on them. And they hold the camera on them for about another 3 seconds. Well, when people are nervous in front of cameras to start with, and the camera is still rolling, they start to sort of, their eyes start to move. All of a sudden, people go, oh, they're guilty. Look at that, look at that. It's just a trick that
deliberate.
Anyone can use.
But look, what's even more shocking is what they did with the Vox Pops, you know, when they walked around supposedly somewhere out in Sydney. I don't know where they were going. They were basically showing people these photographs, some random person on the street, and saying, who do you think that is? I mean, I found that incredible. And like, the average person is going, oh, yeah, that's Chappelle Corby. Oh, yeah, I'd recognise that any day.
Well, it's an Asian setting. There's a brunette and a blonde, and they're asking them. Now, if they said, oh, I don't know who it is, well, are they going to get on telly? No. So they go, oh, that's Chappelle and Mercedes. And they get on telly. It's like someone walking up to you and saying, here, taste this cola, and there's a film crew there. Do you think you like it? Well, you're not going to go, yuck, I hate it. If you want to get on telly, you're going to say, yeah, it's great.
I mean, it's so ridiculous what they did. It's so deliberately manipulative. It has everything to do with propaganda. It's really propaganda. It's extreme, hardcore propaganda.
The thing is, I can't say that there's a grand big conspiracy with the governments and channels and this and that to do. It comes down to basic psychology of ratings. And when 95% of the population love and think Chappelle's innocent, what do you think rates?
Well,
rates is when you say something opposite and you come out with something like, yeah, you're all wrong.
I think you're partially right, Josh. But in this case, I do believe there's a grand conspiracy. We're going to get onto that when we get onto the ABC, because you can understand all this business about ratings, and I can understand.
Well, the ABC is a lot more in bed with the government than some of these private networks. Not to say that the private networks aren't also corruptible, but
the ratings, you know, the ratings is important too, but they benefit from the ratings either way, you see. They benefited from the ratings when it was all pro-Chappelle, then they benefited when it was all against Chappelle. I mean, they can spin it any way they like. When you can completely control the media, when a consortium of, like, the most rich and powerful people on the planet control all the media, they can spin it any way they like. They win. It's a win-win situation for them. All they've got to do is dramatize it and get the people all, you know, worked up over anything. So, but the question about the conspiracy, well, I'm afraid it's there. And we're going to get to that with the ABC. But I just want to, before we get into that, we're going to have a little break for some music. I'm going to play the Tara Hack song, which we didn't play last time. But Sean, can you just talk a little bit about Chappelle's state of mind right at the moment? Because I've heard some pretty disturbing things, and it was pretty recent. It was like only about a month ago they were saying that she's very depressed and potentially suicidal. So can you just like fill us in on whatever you can?
Chappelle's mind just hasn't been able to cope. Like, for the first 4 years, she was the strongest girl, and there was no way in the world she would ever, ever contemplate, you know, suicide or anything like that. But you can just see the contrast between her and Renee Lawrence. Renee Lawrence was guilty. She knew she was. She's accepted her 20 years. That's it. But for Chappelle, every day someone would come down and open that cell, she thinks there's been some evidence. Something's happened. I'm going to be free today. So for 4 years, she thought, every day, I'm going to be free. I'm going to be free. And we kept on trying to get her up. You know, something's got to give. Something's going to happen. There might be a little Japanese tourist going home and suddenly, you know, showing his footage of his holiday, and there'll be Chappelle with a you know, empty boogie board walking along.
Yeah.
Like that. Or just something's got to give. But it's never happened. And that's why. Can anyone imagine to live... Where I'm in Darwin, it's very humid and hot, you know, most of the time. But to live with up to 13 other women in a small room with those 13 other women, the lights are on 24 hours a day. There are no fans. There's no power. There's no running water. There's one toilet, and you're at the mercy of insects during the day and the mosquitoes at night. And that's her life. There is no. She can no longer. She can't watch TV. Like, she can't watch anything like... Well, she can't watch TV in jail anyway, but when she was in the prison hospital, I said to her, look, because I went over to visit her, there's a good movie on, Chappelle, and she says, I can't watch TV, and her voice cracks, and she says that it just confuses me. She can't read anymore. Her mind just... her mind's in turmoil. And then she just zones out. I think it's just a protective thing. She just doesn't... She'll just, like, my daughter has a little frog that plays tunes, and she just sat on the floor and just played the tunes with it for an hour and a half, and you couldn't contact her. She was out to it. Like, that was, you know, you call her and ask her something, and then all of a sudden she hopped up and she says, okay, let's go. And she thought that she could leave.
I really want to... try and build something, a movement to understand that Chappelle is a political prisoner, because I think she needs to understand she's a political prisoner, because, you know, a lot of people have been subjected to this kind of injustice in history, and you've got to be strong to survive it. But if you can understand what the context really is, you've got more chance of surviving it. And I really think that we need to build the awareness within the grassroots of our society that she is a political prisoner. And then she needs to realize that. She needs to remember that. Because think of Nelson Mandela, okay, 20 years, okay? This sort of thing happens for all different reasons, okay? Sometimes it happens to the most unlikely person. But...
it's so sickening. It makes me so angry. And I just beg people of Australia to write to their local representatives to say, let's not forget, this is 5 years of some young girl's life that's stuck in this despicable situation, rotting away in these godforsaken prisons, which are, you know, our prisons here in Australia are like five-star luxury compared. And we're here with our smugness, saying, oh, maybe she's guilty, maybe, oh, no, I think she is, while they themselves have a smoke of a spliff here in Australia, and then they sit there with their smugness without doing anything, without any compassion in their hearts anymore. We're stuck to our mortgages and our TV shows and our Master Chef while some girl is rotting away. You know, folks, get to your pen and paper right now and start writing to your representatives. Start writing to your local police, to your local to your local schools, to your local groups, to your local church minister, to start preaching about this and how unjust this is. It is really sick, and people need to wake up and start being a bit more active, because this is really so sick.
Excellent. Look, guys, I'm just going to take a break here for some music. I'm going to play Tara Hack's Saya Tidak Bersalah. And then we're going to get stuck into the ABC after the break, because we've hardly begun. We've barely touched on the main thrust of what this show is about tonight. So are you guys okay to stand by while we play some music? Okay, here we go.
Truth be told, she starts to wonder. She gets no help from the government down under.
Sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much. When the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, we are back. Truth News Radio is back. We are still here discussing the Chappelle Corby case. We have been going through, we've been basically working our way through some of the information. There's just so much of it. We're here with Sean Hatton, and Josh Jackson is here tonight as well in cyberspace.
What can people do? I said, you know, contact this your congressman, your local representative and stuff. But what can people do that you know of that will directly help either with financially or morally?
To send letters to the government is great. But if they just do research, if they research what's happened, they can see it for themselves. It's all there on the net. You know, there are so many. It's there in black and white. It's so plain for anyone.
You've got to be convinced. Like, there's no point having a kind of moral, you know, a moral ambivalence point of view. Like, you've got to basically work it out. You've got to do the research. I've done the research. I'm now convinced. Okay, and I can never know 100% of anything. Like, it's not about 100%. It's like, as I said, reasonable doubt.
Well, if the Bali police were could be brought up on charges, or you know, go to a trial in Australia, with the evidence that would be presented, they would be. You just know that they would be proven guilty, because there's just so much circumstantial evidence that. Anybody would be convicted on the evidence that you can see. It's just so blatantly obvious if anyone wants to look at it. And what I would hope that the listeners tonight, if they go away and they go and talk to someone else about it, and they explain to them what they've heard tonight, and maybe change their minds, and those people go on, and it's sort of a flow-on effect. Because if they wanted the people that believe that Chappelle is guilty, about all they go on is the propaganda. They've heard it. They thought that the family are tied in with drugs, and that's it. So from then on, all they ever, if they start to lose an argument, all they go, the whole family's into drugs.
But this
one
comes
of the family
back
was into drugs. Like the father. He smoked a joint he was at a party in 1972. I don't even know whether he was smoking the joint at the time, but Michael had a broken leg at the time, and he was the one that was caught. He wasn't convicted of it. He got a fine. That's his total police record. Rossley hasn't got a police record at all. Michael Jr. doesn't have a police record. Mercedes doesn't. Chappelle doesn't. When they tested Chappelle's blood and urine, and as we all know, it stays in the system for 3 months, marijuana, and she was clear. And yet people will just go, she's a druggie. And I smoke, and then you hear rumours that I smoke drugs with Chappelle and so forth. She hated drugs. She hated marijuana. She's a VB drinking girl, you know. That's what she used to like. She liked a VB down the local Coolangatta Hotel, having a game of pool with a friend. That was Chappelle's life.
Absolutely.
And, the rumours and innuendo that just swirl around about the family being drug dealers, the Australian government know they're not drug dealers. You don't work 40 or 50 hours every week in jobs and be drug dealers. They live. Rossley lives in a housing commission home, an ex-housing commission home at Logan Lee. She doesn't drive a fancy car. None of the family are well off.
This is the typical, you know, sort of outlook that people have that, housing commission, and then you hear, the next door neighbor had some, like, all of it, it doesn't matter. I mean, I know plenty of people who smoke pot. Does that mean that I smoke pot? No. I mean, it's got nothing to do with anything. It's got nothing to do with any, even if the father did smoke pot, just doesn't matter. It has got nothing to do with nothing. And this is the sick thing about this trial by media. Is everyone's got this opinion when in actual fact the opinion doesn't matter.
Well, look, I'm going to use that as a segue into what we're going to discuss now, because the ABC went one step further than just saying people smoked pot. You know, that the ABC claimed in a piece, which I've got the audio up here right now, that it was much more involved than that. They claimed that there was a drug smuggling kind of cartel with Mick Corby at the centre, and then they had people that they brought on saying, oh, Chappelle was involved in drugs from her early childhood. She didn't know anything else. They even say that. She wouldn't have known any different. Now, I'm going to play it. We're going to stop it. We're going to analyse it. So, Sean, if you want to stop it at any point, just let me know. I'm going to start from the beginning. This is the Late Line piece that was aired in 2008, I think. Mm-hmm. Here we go. This is possibly one of the most extreme pieces of propaganda, one of the most outrageous pieces of propaganda ever put forth in my experience. And I've investigated a lot of things. I've looked at 9/11. I've looked at the JFK assassinations. I've looked at the Port Arthur massacres and a lot of different things. This really tops the lot, I have to say. So here we go.
It's now been alleged there were at least two generations of Corbys involved in the drug trade. New evidence presented to Late Line suggests that the father, Michael Corby Sr., and his daughter, Chappelle Corby, represent 30 years in the marijuana business.
I'll just pause it right there, because that initial statement is so strong, is so overwhelming, you know, new evidence. And the music is scary.
And the music!
The music is terrifying. And it's on ABC. It's on your trusted television. It's on the government television channel that you have to believe. Okay?
Yeah.
So you've got to take all this into account when we listen to this. So I'll continue.
What did you nod your head for? Does that mean yes? How about you, Mr. Cameraman?
But Michael Corby Sr.'s experience in the drug trade is now said to have involved more than just the occasional puff. In the late 1970s, according to a family member, Michael Corby moved to Mackay in North Queensland after a stint in the Navy. His military record indicates he had problems with discipline and left the service after going absent without leave. Alan Trembath is a retired farmhand living on the outskirts of Mackay. He is also a cousin of the late Michael Corby. He says that by 1980, Chappelle Corby's father had become well known in Mackay as the local marijuana dealer, something which caused tensions in his family.
Michael used to be in and out of trouble with dope, and, you know, over the years, I can remember some hell of a big blues with his parents. He used to hang around with a biker grip on the Gold Coast. I can remember him and Auntie Pearl, or my Auntie Pearl, his mother, having arguments and fights over it, you know, different periods of time when I was staying at their house in Ekeburn.
Alan Trembath says that Michael Corby Sr. was not just a small-time dealer, but was involved in moving large amounts of marijuana throughout northern Queensland.
Can we just pause it right there?
Keyong Hotel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean, can you sort of say something to these sort of allegations?
When I was 18, I lived with Michael and Rossi for a while. They had lived in a housing commission home out at Woodridge. Michael was driving. He was working as an auto electrician. Michael loved to just play around, tinker with cars. We'd have three or four cars around the yard. He just puts cars together again. That was Michael. Michael moved up to Mackay after Rossley and him broke up in about 1980. I went up to Mackay at one stage and stayed with him. He was living in the bottom of a family member's house. I think it was his auntie's house that he was living underneath. I'm not 100% sure, but I know it was a family member. He was trying to get a job at... There's a mine out there that he was trying to get a job at, and so he's staying there. I got a job on South Mole Island, and I didn't see him for about 3 or 4 months. And I come back, he'd moved into a small flat, and Michael didn't spend that much time in Mackay. Within a year, Michael was working at Middlemount as a TA, and that was... So I would say the total time that Michael was in Mackay would have been 12 months, probably. I'd say that's about tops, because I left to go overseas, and Michael, I went to Middlemount to work. He helped me get a job in Middlemount, and so we're only talking about a time period of less than a year, and that time he was already working in Middlemount for probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. So I'm not sure exactly how long he was in Mackay.
How well did Alan Trembath know Michael and Chappelle?
Sorry?
How well would you say Alan Trembath knew Michael and Chappelle?
I don't think he's ever met Chappelle. I don't think he's ever met. He's talking about if he did, he might have went to, as they said, Auntie Pearl, like Michael's mother. He might have went to that place. But as far as Rosalie knows, this is my sister and Chappelle's parent, she says that, best of her knowledge, Alan Trembath never met any of the kids. You know, so he's talking. And look, I don't like to repeat things that I'm not sure of. But from Absolutely. What I've read, that John Stewart interviewed Alan Trembath in a mental institute.
Well,
know how true that is.
It seems to be confirmed that he has been in and out of mental hospitals because he has severe alcoholism, right? So he's been treated for alcoholism. Is that correct?
But his story, it goes on further on, you'll hear the story. He supposedly walked up to Michael and offered him $80,000 to go to Cedar Bay to collect some marijuana. Well, back in 1980, if that's around about that time, well, that 1980, you buy
a lot of money.
Houses in Brisbane for that sort of money. And Michael's was living in a housing commission home, and he's going to give this guy 6 houses to go and get some drugs. Like, it's beyond belief. It's just ridiculous. And then Michael leaves that and goes and works in Middlemount for the next, 1981 through till about 2003, I think he left Middlemount. So he's there for 22 years living in Middlemount as a miner.
Well, if he's got $80,000 to, you know, casually offer a mate, that all seems a bit improbable. Let's just continue with it, because we're gonna get into that in the audio. So I'll just keep going.
Hell, having a few beers, and Michael walked in. He approached me, and we went and sat down. And he said to me, basically straight out, he said, "Do you want to earn 80 grand?" I said, "80 grand." I said, "What have I got to do? Go and kill somebody for it?" And he said, "No." He said, "Get you to take a boat up to Cedar Bay, pick up a lot of marijuana and bring it back down to Mackay, and you'll get 80 grand for it." Well, at the time I thought, well, 80 grand I could do with it, but if I got caught, 10 years in jail at 8 grand a year, when you got 3 little kids, it just didn't sum up. So I refused.
In the 1980s, Michael Corby Sr. moved to the central Queensland town of Middlemount, where he worked at the local mine. There, he lived next door to another miner, Tony Lewis.
Tony and Mick associated together all the time. They lived next door to each other, and they worked at the open cut together, so they were pretty friendly.
10 years later, Tony Lewis and Michael Corby Sr. both moved to a small town called Ivera near Gladstone on the central Queensland coast.
They became
neighbours once again, and in September...
Sorry, what was that, Sean?
That's wrong. He said 10 years later. He's talking more like 20 years later.
Okay.
Michael bought a couple of little places with different miners and that sort of thing. Like, he bought a place at Serena. He had that in the early 90s, he bought another house that he owned at Serena as well, and he used to just have his holidays there on this little shack at Serena. So he didn't move to this Ivanhoe place. I think he didn't move there until like 2000 or something like that before he bought any land at Gladstone.
Yeah, I mean, so far, we're about halfway through this. The whole story really hinges on this guy, Alan Trembath. This is something we're going to follow up. Truth News is going to follow up Alan Trembath, okay?
Yes.
Either he's lying or he's telling the truth or he's crazy. Maybe one of the three.
These allegations that come out later, they wait for Michael to die. And even when they do an allegation, they go and say it happened on this date or around Christmas or it happened. It's always very, very, they're always elusive. And when they're saying these dates, they'll just go, oh, it was sometime in summer of, I think it was 1982, could have been 83. It's all these, you know, different, they never will put anything down. And it's always, and it's only after Mick died that these lowlife will come out and say anything like this, because Michael would have been able to prove his innocence. When that idiot Macaulay said that, you know, he used to contact Rossley, contact Michael.
The South Australian drug dealer, yeah.
Yeah, which was... Michael.
Another story.
He never had a telephone. He never had a telephone in his house. He didn't have a mobile. The only way we used to contact Michael was you would ring the bar of the local pub and they'd say, is Michael there? And then you'd have a yelling match with him, telling him, you know, if you scream, have to yell at him for him to hear you on the phone. He didn't have a phone because he was going deaf. And that's the funny thing. Like this bloke that said he used to contact Michael, well, what did he do? By carrier pigeon? Because Michael never had a phone.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there. And basically what we're looking at here is a very stark divergence between what the ABC is projecting with this piece and what you're telling me. And what you're telling me is also backed up by the police, who said that there is no evidence to suggest Mick Corby was involved in any form of drugs, you know, the drug trade.
Can I just say this, that I stupidly believe some of the propaganda that the press said, because when Michael died and I went to the funeral and Tony Lewis was at the funeral, I actually said, what are you doing here? And I was quite angry that he was there because I thought that he was a drug dealer. And I thought,
yes,
what are you doing coming to this? And then I found that all that was a complete lie. But when he finally got, after 12 months of going through the courts, he went to the Supreme Court. The judge said, what are you doing? How come this case is in front of me? Because he didn't have a commercial amount of drugs. What Tony Lewis ended up being convicted, he got a good behaviour bond for 12 months, and yet you didn't see that splashed onto the papers. Corby family, Corby friend gets 12 months good behaviour bond. No, they wanted to leave it as it was. That
it wasn't even a conviction. My God, that's amazing, isn't it?
He got a good behaviour bond, a 12-month good behaviour bond.
That's so important, isn't it, Sean?
The only reason it went all the way to the Supreme Court is because the Corby name came up. And, you know, poor old Tony Lewis had to cop all the extra aggravation and so forth, all because it just became, someone found out that he lived next door to Michael Corby.
Now, the Tony Lewis issue comes up here shortly in the audio, so I'll continue with it. But, of course, the way the ABC spins it, it's much more sinister than that. And they use the phrase vacuum-sealed plastic bags, and they actually show a photograph of someone with gloves on holding a vacuum-sealed plastic bag. I suspect that the photo that they're showing there is a stock image and that it has nothing to do with actually... And I'm actually now questioning whether the statement that the drugs were in vacuum-sealed plastic bags is even correct. Because it's a statement they could easily...
Can I tell you this? I think that is true. I do think that Tony kept some in the freezer.
Right.
I think I remember talking to him about that there, you know, sort of thing. But we're not talking about... You know, we're talking about vacuum-sealed bags that... not huge things like...
The 4.2 kilos that was in Chappelle's bag.
Like sandwich bag type thing, you know. It's not very big. It's about 8 inches square.
Okay. Well, that's a good point. Well, look, let's just continue playing from here. Cheers.
In September 2004, the Queensland Police raided Tony Lewis's property and discovered 5 kilos of marijuana in vacuum-sealed plastic bags and thousands of dollars in cash. In a recent documentary about Chappelle Corby, Tony Lewis denied that his next-door neighbour knew about his marijuana crop.
Mick knew nothing. No, I never ever told me. He would have got right into me and said, no way in the world, boy, you'll end up in the slammer or something. Mick would have just done that, yes.
So you haven't heard from Tony Lewis in that 2 years?
Tony who?
Kim Moore tipped off the police about Tony Lewis's marijuana operation. A one-time heroin user, she kicked the habit 25 years ago and was living near Tony Lewis and Michael Corby's farms. She says she first met Michael Corby as a man called Mick at the local pub with Tony Lewis.
We're having a couple of drinks at the bar and Tony and came in. Anyway, and we're sitting there talking for a little while and then this other gentleman came in and I was introduced to him as Mick.
On September the 16th, 2004, 3 weeks before Chappelle Corby's arrest in Bali, Kim Moore made a statement to the Queensland Police. Her statement became the basis of a Queensland Police crime intelligence report. It says,
information is that along with a person with the name Michael is also involved with the transport of these drugs. The informant suggests large quantities are being moved to Bali.
Kim Moore has confirmed to the ABC that the Michael she named 3 weeks before Chappelle Corby's arrest was Michael Corby Sr.
Old Michael Corby is very close to Tony Lewis and he is involved with the making that Tony does with his drugs in the running.
Queensland Police say they have no evidence to link anyone else to the drugs found on Tony Lewis's property. The ABC has obtained the...
Isn't that interesting that the police are not interested in this?
Yeah.
Now, the ABC are treating it as a top billing story, which I think they aired on a Friday night, correct me if I'm wrong, and which then hit all the newspapers on the Saturday. It was a massive story.
Yeah, they always do that, the ABC. They do it on the Friday night, and then they can't, all the other papers pick it up because they can't check
The facts.
The sources and so forth. Yeah. And then by Monday, they realise that it's a lot of rubbish, but by that time, the damage is done.
Then they're sort of backpedalling, but people just remember the mud being flung. They don't remember anything else.
I just can't get over the soundtrack.
Oh, the soundtrack is like a horror movie, isn't it? I mean, it's
just... really is so sick. It is so craftily put together, this hit piece. It really is.
I'm really glad you're actually with us on this episode, Josh, because you know when I watched this, I had chills running down my spine to discover something so wicked in my own country, and I wasn't even aware of it. You know.
Yeah,
Kim Moore wasn't a credible witness when the court case with Jody Power and Mercedes. She was brought in as a witness, and when they asked, because she said that she met Mercedes at Michael's place, and she'd never been to Michael's place, and we all knew that. So we said, it was asked what was distinctive about the property, what were the dogs like. She couldn't remember. All she said, I can't remember. There's a distinctive gate. There's even peacocks running around there, and people would normally remember there was a peacock. People normally remember dogs, let alone not what type of dog they were. They normally remember their names. She couldn't remember anything. She was really laughed out of court. Anyone sitting in that courtroom, I wasn't there, but I was relayed this on a nightly basis of what actually happened. And what the press was writing in the papers wasn't a reflection of what was going on in the courtroom. And but the jury took, I think, 3 hours or 2 hours or something in this only a very short period of time to find for Mercedes.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Kim Moore was the only witness that Channel 7 was able to get to corroborate...
Jodie's mum.
Oh, that's right, and Jodie Power's mum. Now, we haven't really got into the topic of Jodie Power on this show. I think we're going to have to do a whole other show on Jodie Power. It's too long. But just for now, I'll just quickly explain that Jodie Power was a friend of Chappelle who turned on Chappelle and went to Channel 7 with an incredible story of just extreme defamation, claiming that the entire family was involved in drugs, and that Chappelle's sister Mercedes then launched a defamation case, which finally went to, was it Supreme Court? Went to court in New South Wales, and Mercedes Corby completely won the case. Stuart Littlemore QC was representing her and tore to shreds the entire defamation case. And it links into the Kim Moore issue here because Kim Moore was brought in as a witness. Now, Kim Moore is allegedly, according to this piece, Kim Moore is a police informant, and yet The police themselves are saying they have no evidence. There's things here that don't add up.
No.
We need to find out from the police whether or not Kim Moore, A, is really an informant, B, whether or not she's lying. Because
or whether she even put a report in, you know, like he says. I wouldn't be surprised.
Indeed.
There was no such report.
Yes, yes,
you know,
yes.
There's so much other, many other lies that he's told that it just begs the question, was the whole premise of his story a lie?
And when you consider the kind of resources that Channel 7 would have had and the money they were willing to spend.
To find someone else, to find someone that would say, yes, I bought marijuana from Chappelle or, you know, I've known Mercedes too. They couldn't find anyone.
I mean, even if they could have said something about Mick Corby, it still would have helped their case. They couldn't even say anything about Mick Corby.
They couldn't find anyone because they're not, they've got nothing to do. They're just working class family. Unfortunately, and the more you trying to defend something, if you say something to about anyone, whether or not, just say for instance, you call someone a pedophile, that person has to defend themselves. If they don't defend themselves and just let it go, well then they go, oh, they don't. The Australian public will go, oh, he didn't react to that. There must be some truth to it. So then you turn the other way and you go, oh. He's a pedophile, and they say, I'm not a pedophile. And they go, he protests too much. So there must be something to it. So
well,
the better way you try and defend yourself, the Australian public will find a way to find you guilty.
Well, look, just look back at the Dingo Got My Baby case. It's exactly what you just described. You know, the public just, all you need to do is put a little bit tinge of music. Either happy music will turn everyone to say, yeah, she's positive, or sad music or negative music behind a shifty eye. You can make anything out of anything, and editors know that.
Oh, but you pull around the Pope and have and play that sort of music, and he could look guilty.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And this is the sick thing about this irresponsibility of the media to air such absolute filth. Absolute rubbish.
Well, it appears that the ABC is acting directly as an arm of government.
The ABC do it subliminally. They're very, very clever. Yeah. Like, for instance, the... what's that name of it? Sorry, I've just gone blank. The comedy show, War on... The Chasers, War on Everything.
Okay, yeah.
On their logo, they've got Osama bin Laden, John Howard, Bush, and Chappelle. So Chappelle...
Oh, that's outrageous.
You're allowed to ridicule Osama bin Laden, Bush, and Howard because he's a politician, and Chappelle's there as well. So it just reinforces it to the general public. Oh, you know, that she's something to laugh at.
Yeah.
Outrageous. That is just unforgivable that they would do that.
Look, it breaks your heart when you know that she's innocent, and the way that the Australian public and the way the media treat her, you know, sort of thing, just the jokes that go around, you know, sort of thing, and people can laugh at it. And, you know, I used to think that Australia was a pretty good place to live and that people would... We stood up for a fair go and we looked after our mates. And it's quite the opposite now. It's like stab them in the back while they're down. That's the motto. What we get from reading feedbacks from magazines and so forth, and you get on the net and you read what people say. And, you know, like the question, should Australian government bring Chappelle home to serve a time in Australia? And, you know, 56% of Australians are saying, no, let her rot in hell. Like, for a bag of dope. It's just abhorrent. And the question is abhorrent.
This is the thing that I said today to a mate. You know, whether she's guilty or not, if we put aside everything, it is a bag of dope, folks. It's a bag of dope, however big it is, and we've all got... I mean, it's the biggest drug in Australia apart from alcohol and cigarettes. You know, everyone has had a smoke here and there, you know, or know someone who smoked and is a successful normal person. And to say that this person deserves to rot in a jail over in Bali, whether she's guilty or not, is so demented and is against human rights, general basic human rights. And
we wouldn't do it to a prisoner of war.
Exactly.
Look, let's just finish the last 20 seconds or so of this outrageous ABC piece. There might just be a couple more interesting nuggets we can get out of it. I'll just continue.
Flight records for Michael Corby Sr. He travelled to Bali on September 4, 2004, just 4 weeks before Chappelle Corby was arrested at Denpasar Airport. Before he died, Michael Corby Sr. denied having anything to do with the drugs found in his daughter's boogie board bag.
Never touched that bag! Never seen it! Never had enough to do with the bloody bag!
Michael Corby Sr.'s cousin says he's sorry for Chappelle Corby and believes she simply followed her father into the drug trade.
Honestly, I don't think Chappelle would have known any different, you know, because she would have been around drugs all her life.
Michael Corby Sr. was never convicted or jailed on drug trade offences. However, his now infamous daughter was not so lucky and is due for release in another 16 years. John Stewart, Late Line.
Well, there we have it. The world according to John Stewart. Now, a couple more claims there, Sean, to look at. One that Mick travelled to Bali 2 weeks before Chappelle. And
4 weeks, yeah, 4 weeks before.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is there anything sinister in that?
I'm not sure, but I imagine he did go over there. The thing was, Michael had spinal cancer, and it was going to his brain. He was on huge amounts of drugs, and he used to go from one, prescription drugs, of course, from one level to another to try and control the brain to control the pain. So every now he was. Can you imagine just Michael's situation? When you hear that piece where he's going, "Oh no, it had nothing to do with the drugs, Chappelle," he's just screaming that.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
He was. Your daughter's been thrown in jail. You've got this terrible disease that's killing you, that's attacking your brain, and you're on massive painkillers to try and control it. And you've got these reporters coming over and asking you, did she do it? That's the thing. You can imagine the pressure that he's under.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the wording at the end there was something like, Michael was lucky he was never put in jail. So there's the premise is that he's guilty by this reporter. That absolutely guilty. We don't need a jury. We don't need the concepts of the Magna Carta here.
Any police report.
We just don't need any. I'm going to say he was very lucky he was never put in jail, but his daughter was not so lucky. I mean, just the whole premise is so disgusting. Absolutely. That's such a journalist. He should be everyone in the should go up to this reporter and ask him and put a camera in his face and really ask him some tough questions.
Well, that's what that's one of the things I'm proposing to do. We are Change Style, Josh. Because I think he works in Sydney, and we want to track him down.
Yeah, and put the tough questions on him and put a camera in his face, because this guy needs to come to some answers. It's really a disgusting, despicable man that would do something like that to a fellow human being.
Well, yeah. Look, and by the way, Late Line issued an apology about a week later, but it was a 30-second apology. Yeah, maybe 10 seconds. It was so quick you'd probably miss it if you blinked. But they I don't know why they did it. Perhaps they were they pressured by Mercedes or anyone?
I'm not sure, but I'm not sure exactly why. But I think they just had to because it was a pack
because
of lies.
Because it's suable. It's suable.
Because yes, I think they did it to cover themselves. Yeah. Yeah, I think they...
So if you don't say sorry, then it's an absolutely suable offence to report it's slander.
They reported something on the 6 o'clock show, whatever, on the drive show, whatever it is, on the evening of on the ABC. And right. They did a rebuttal on it at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, really?
They apologised for their story at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Is that when they broadcast the apology?
That's when they broadcast an apology. Yeah, one such apology. I forget exactly what they said, but they said it at 6 o'clock at night, and then they broadcast their apology at 4 in the morning.
Well, that's done for legal reasons, isn't it? They're basically just protecting themselves against being sued. But the damage what they've done is so severe. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, that was only shortly after Mercedes had just won the case against Channel 7. She probably didn't want to go into another giant legal battle. Can I just say this? Yeah.
People think that the Corbys are money-hungry. You know, nothing could be further from the truth. And, you know, I can imagine people going, oh, you know. It's the court case was never about money. The court case was about she just couldn't put up with these lies. Like, she's just...
Yeah.
She's there over there in Bali, and she hears these stories about defaming her, and which is having an effect on her sister, you know. So she just wanted it to be known, to be brought out. Like, it could have, if it went the wrong way for her, it could have been, you know, terrible. Channel 7 tried to not let her sue. They said they wanted her to have to come up with $100,000. This is the week before the trial, because she's at risk of flight because she lives in Bali, and they wouldn't be able to regain their money if they won the court case. And the judge said no, you know. Just getting back to Mercedes,
sure.
Digress there a little. And you hear all these outlandish amounts. I think these reporters come up with a figure and then they double it. Supposedly Mercedes was paid by Channel 7. And I can tell you that...
I've heard figures in the millions quoted.
It's just ridiculous, the figures. The figures that Mercedes would have been given is, you know, if you win a court case, you know they're going to appeal, and it's just going to be dragged on and be dragged on and be dragged on. Mercedes won what she wanted to win. She wanted to prove that Jody Powers was lying. That was it. So she took what was offered.
And I see.
And she's quite happy to do that. As far as making money and that sort of thing from magazines, like, people think, why would she do Ralph Magazine? Well, Mercedes did Ralph Magazine after consulting me, her mother, Chappelle.
Okay.
If you're trying to get the word out that Chappelle is innocent, and papers in Australia won't print anything that's pro-Chappelle or anything, is just black banned. It's just not in the papers.
Sure.
Yeah. Or magazines. So Ralph Magazine offered Mercedes the opportunity to do an interview and to say, and she was able to say what she wanted to say. And if it meant getting down to a swimmers, well, then so be it. She did.
Why not? Who cares? I mean, look, it's, you know...
And yet people will... I've read things where she strips for revealed all. She stripped. She didn't strip. She just was in bikinis, and a few photos in the bikini. And she's a surfy girl, you know, sort of thing. She's used to wearing a bikini. She has nothing to hide.
Well, yeah, you know, it's perfectly respectable for everyone else. But, you know, for Mercedes, oh, no, she can't go on Ralph because, you know, look, I mean, this girl, folks, this family is desperate. I mean, it's absolutely desperate. You do anything when you've been totally black banned from anything. You're sort of just looking for any light to grasp at and help your sister. I mean, and you know, it's not even bad. Like I said, like anyone else does it. Oh, geez, that's, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, there's some terrible Channel 10 reporter. I can't remember her name. Tracy Spicer. Just the viciousness that she come out with the article about her. You know, sort of thing.
Okay. I didn't realize Channel 10 was in on it as well. I knew 9, 7, and 2 were.
She was next reporter from Channel 10. I think she'd been sacked from Channel 10 only about 6 months earlier.
Okay.
So she's writing for the Sydney Morning Herald or one of those papers anyway.
And we know that Anna Corrin was absolutely hated. I mean, we know that Anna Corrin got so much flack over what she did to Mercedes Corby that she basically had to leave Channel 7.
I think she actually got a promotion.
Well, she did go to CNN. From
CNN
what
would be probably a step up.
Yeah. Oh, look. Yeah. I'm not saying that for her it worked out really well. But, you know, the fact is she's a nasty piece of work, you know, and she did her dirty deed for the crime syndicate, and now she works at CNN. And I do think that's probably the way it works.
Yeah.
And John Stewart is probably doing very well for himself as well. But look, we're going to track him down. Look, we're going to have to wind this show up because I'd really like to go on. We're just going to have to break it up, and we're going to do more shows. And, you know, you're very welcome to come on again, Sean.
Okay.
But
we haven't covered that much. But can I just say that if all I ask is for people to do some research, just look into it don't be blinded by the lies that have been perpetuated on this country. It's there, and it's easy to research if you want to research it and look at it. And look at it, turn it around. When you see things, turn things around and sort of look at like, just say for instance, this is just a for instance, like those photos of Elizabeth Short. Think that in that situation, if you were really there, wouldn't you have waited for them to stand up so you could get a proper photo? I'm tipping she probably did, but there would have been such a height discrepancy or something that she couldn't use those photos. She would have thought all the Christmases would come at once if she truly believed that she's seen Mercedes and Chappelle. But there were so many instances just like that.
Yeah.
And where there's been innuendo on that, and it's just a little bit of truth or something, and it's just sown to make this big lie.
That's right. And look, guys, you know, listeners, you've got to look into this. And we need all the help we can get. We need any of our listeners who have got any information or who would like to do some research to collaborate with us. I want to nail the ABC on this. We need to be able to prove that John Stewart concocted his story. We need to be able to prove fraud. And I don't think it's going to be that hard to do. We've got several witnesses there that he used that appear to be very, very flaky. Their credibility is very poor. We just need to find a little bit more about how he got the Alan Trembath interview, what inducements he gave Alan Trembath, and the same with Kim Moore. And we may even be able to take some action against the ABC according to their charter.
Well, if Kim Moore will sing for money, I mean, if you offered her, money to tell a story about how John Stewart got her to talk, you might find that, you know, she'll tell the truth.
Well, indeed. Look, if there's anyone listening who's got, you know, a few bob to spare, you know, I don't. But look, anyone out there who'd like to help, please get in touch with us, because I think in this case money may actually work. We
or
may
if
be
there's
able
a
to...
pooling of people, you know, if, the, yeah, yeah, if there's we, a pooling, yeah. Get together at work and pull some money together or something. You know, people need to really get a passion back into their life. And, you know, if you know, this is the sort of thing that beats depression. You know, there's so much people depressed in this society nowadays. It's because all they do is think about themselves and sit there watching TV. If you do something to help someone, you'll feel good about yourself again. And this is a great cause to help a fellow Australian who's really suffering and really deeply suffering, not just physically, but extraordinarily mentally. And you know, the family as well, it must be under huge mental stress. So, you know, I really call out to all our listeners to join on the Truth News site. Check out the show notes, check out any links, go do the research and try to pull together a grassroots movement. You know, we can't do everything at the show. We're just two guys. We've got day jobs as well, and we're trying as hard as we can. So come on, folks, get on your feet and start doing some stuff.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for that, Josh. Great summary.
Just one, Herowood.
Yeah.
Herowood, just those couple of places on the net that they could go to that they want to find and do some research.
Yep. Yeah, quick. What are they? Thanks.
Oh, just Chappelle Corby.
Yep.
.net. So just all they need to do is put that in and then just maybe something like the truth behind the lies or something like that. If they just type that in, all these stories, all these breakdowns will come up.
Great. No, that's superb.
So if they just go Chappelle, the truth behind the lies, and then they can follow on from there.
I'll put all those show notes up. There'll be links to all those. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's at truthnews.com.au, folks.
Awesome. Okay, look, thanks Australia, thanks world, thanks cyberspace, and we'll see you next
week.
Cheers.
Thanks.